Welcome to Off the Bench with Danny Cannell.
Danny Cannell, back to throw, first down, the pass, beats his tight end.
And Rajah Bell.
Bell has got 22 for Rajah.
Saw the future of football right before your eyes. Just yell it out, man. He can't guard me.
What is going on? Welcome to Off the Bench with Danny Cannell and Rajah Bell. We got a huge show lined up for you today. We got CBS sports writer Pete Blackburn. He's really a funny dude. We're going to get him on to talk some Winter Olympics, a little hockey, and some of the crazy stuff going on in the Boston sports media market. There was some incredible catfishing. I don't even know if that's the right term that you use for it, but one of their writers got majorly played. So that's pretty fun to talk about. The Colts have a new coach, and guess what? It's not Josh McDaniels. If you were under a rock, maybe you didn't follow what happened there. We'll get into that some. But first, my man Rajah, our girl Hannah, Debo, we're going to have to carry the show today because I feel like there's some slacking off. You guys are hurting. It's Monday. So, Rajah, you're salty.
It's not even a good word.
So you lost
it.
A bunch of stuff, basically.
Yes.
You lost your phone. And your
I didn't
wallet.
Lose my phone.
Your kids lost.
My kids and my wife lost my phone.
So that's what I wanted to ask you. Like, are you a guy that loses a lot of stuff? Like, have you lost your wallet multiple times?
I'm a misplacer.
You are. Okay.
But like around the house, and then I find it.
Right.
I'm not generally like a go out and lose my phone or lose my wallet type of dude.
Losing your wallet is a nightmare. And then on top of that, your phone. How do you even
survive?
I'm
more upset about the phone.
How'd you get here? Like, what'd you do? I can't survive without either of those items.
I went home last night. We got home. We're supposed to go to Richard Hamilton's like surprise 40th. And I realized in the car, like I didn't have my wallet. And I had just changed my pants because I coached all day. I was like, oh, You know, so I was like, damn, I think I lost my wallet. I went back to the gym, didn't find it. And then like 7 seconds later, I was like, Cindy, pass me my phone. And she's like, huh? I was like, oh, what? So we stripped everything out of the car, dug through everything, and it just ruined my night.
Yeah.
And I haven't been able to get over it. Like, I'm just pissed.
I wouldn't even be able to wake up without my phone. Like, that's
your alarm.
It's everything.
I had to borrow her phone for the alarm. Like, you're right.
With my kids, I almost have a zero tolerance policy for losing stuff.
Yeah.
And that they lose stuff all the time. My phone, I wouldn't lose because I'm addicted to it. I check it every 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, I literally check stuff and notifications. I feel it all the time. Like, if I don't have it, I'm like, where'd it go? So I don't have it.
I lose my phone a lot.
They asked me about my wallet. And the point – when I'm in a gym, right, I'm coaching third and fifth grade, and I got all kind of stuff going on. And so my little six-year-old, because he doesn't have much to do, is addicted to the phone. So he's always running around touching my pockets trying to grab my phone. And I'm always like, just take it, buddy. So if someone had come up and just taken my wallet out of my pocket, I would have had no idea because I would have thought it was him – grabbing for my phone.
All right, so Christmas is a long ways off, but I think I'm going to get you a Tile, one of those things that helps you find your stuff.
Oh,
you
my
put
gosh,
it in your
need that.
Yeah, yeah, it's help you locate stuff. So that's what we're going to get you. All right, NBA, there was some new looks going around. So let's go around the league a little bit. Let's find out what's going on, how people are looking. First up, the Cavs, completely new look team. They faced the Celtics. They went to Boston, had a 22-point win. It was really impressive. George Hill, before the game, was talking about just the new environment, what it's like to play with LeBron.
Just do your job, I guess. Let the rest take care of itself. We have one of the best players in the history of the game. So, I mean, I'm sure he's going to dictate the tempo and things like that. And we just got to do our job, be the best role players we can possibly be. He's the Batman, and we got to be all Robin. So we got to figure it out.
All right, he couldn't have said anything better as far as bowing down to LeBron. Like, and that's kind of what you have to do. And he did it, came in, and he's playing that role. LeBron, you're the alpha. We'll follow.
Yeah, I said it last week. I think naturally those guys are Robins anyway. None of them have ever been the Batman. They've been some really good Robins, but you know, the cool part about this is, and I got to give Kobe Altman a lot of credit. I did last week too, but he is my boy.
You
I like Kobe.
Pretty tight.
We spent a lot of time together. Like, good young, great personality, really really smart basketball mind. Like, knows the game. I think he got left holding a bag this year in that situation, you know? Like, it just fell apart on the Cavs and Griff so quickly. I think Kobe was kind of sitting there like, what the heck? I got Kyrie who doesn't want to be there. But this was really, really, really smart. And it's not just Kobe. I mean, they've got a staff full of guys there that really do their homework. They're grinders. And they met a lot of the team's needs. And not just in terms of, like, the future of the franchise getting younger and more athletic, but specifically as it pertains to playing with LeBron, these are all guys that are catch-and-shoot guys for the most part. save for Larry Nance Jr., who's a rim run high energy guy, which is something you were missing as well. So when you plug them in with LeBron, and none of them have played with a guy like LeBron. Like, they played with Paul George, who's good, but not LeBron. They played with an aging Kobe, who's good, but not LeBron. So he's going to make all of them better. And their skill sets give LeBron even more space to do what he does. What you could feel there, and I don't mean to get long-winded, but what you could feel last night watching that was an energy. And Kobe talked to it a lot when the trade came down about the culture and the energy in the building. You could see them enjoying the game. There was an energy that had been lacking with the Cavs for like the last 3 weeks that just leapt off the TV screen at you.
So, all right, so Debo had this in there. Give us one overreaction based on the Sunday's game. So is there an overreaction that you've heard from people?
Well, the overreaction is that they're going to be that every night. Like, they're not, that's right. Not who they're going to be every night.
Right.
But if your energy level changes and the feeling of liking to play with each other is better.
Right.
You can figure it out. Like, you can now start to put the pieces back together to become an Eastern Conference champion. That thing was trending in the wrong direction. It's now trending in the correct direction.
Here's what I would say. Of course it's going to be a good energy. It's the first game out. Right. Everybody's excited to play with each other. It's sort of like marriage. Like, it's the honeymoon phase. Everybody loves yep. each other because you haven't had that fight yet. Like, I want to see what happens when they lose a couple games. What happens when they lose a game they shouldn't, or when they face some adversity, how do you respond?
Well, I'll tell you what they don't have to worry about. When that happens, they don't have to worry about the little guy getting up in front of the mic and calling everybody else out.
Yeah.
They're not going to have to worry about, and that's part of the change of culture. It's part of why it's hard to have 4 or 5 alphas on one team in the NBA, because that starts to creep into people's subconscious. Like, who the hell is this little dude think he is, man? He ain't done nothing on the squad, and he's up here rapping about we're the worst team. And, you know, that's not going to happen with George Hill, Jordan Clarkson, Larry Nance Jr. They're going to play their role. They're going to say what's politically correct for the media. They're going to keep it in-house. They're going to follow LeBron James' lead. And when you have a clear delineation of, like, roles, that adversity becomes easier to kind of get through because everyone knows who to follow. You don't have 4 guys trying to lead us out of it.
LeBron, after the game, talked about it.
And the attention to detail tonight was at an all-time high for the first time this season. We got some players that can go out and get their own. That's pretty smart. And they picked it up, like they've been here all year. So it's still going to take a little time, even though this was an impressive win on the road. That's a good start.
So LeBron, I'm sure you saw this, but he said that he played 2K again to try to get used to his teammates before they arrived. I remember specifically doing the segment saying, would it help? Because he did it with Isaiah Thomas before he was healthy enough to play. Does he give any credence to it? Yeah. I think LeBron just thinks it's cool and funny to say.
He probably does. But again, I think he's one of those guys that is on the forefront of trying to use every advantage he can get. I mean, you know, they got I even looked into it for my kids, like those virtual reality like goggles, like to see if there was any kind of software that would be good for young point guards or young quarterbacks to put them in, stuff like that. And those 2K games, they're not that, but there's something to be said for. Here's the word, it's a simple word, but the word that I would use to describe what I saw yesterday for them was fun.
Yeah.
It looked fun.
Absolutely.
And it looked like LeBron's spirit was back and they were re-energized. And I believe in that.
Me too.
Yeah.
Every good team I've been on, it's funny, when you're in a playoff hunt or you're on a team that has championship-level contentions and you're winning, it doesn't feel like work.
Right.
When you're on a losing team, it feels like work. And you notice guys start going just for the paycheck. And you start going through the motion. That sucks. It's no fun to be a part of a team like that. Paul Pierce was honored. This was the day that was kind of funny because this was supposed to be the day that was controversy because Isaiah was going to have his video tribute in Boston. Obviously, no need for that. He's no longer on the Cavs. But Paul Pierce was honored. Doc Rivers was there supporting him. Kevin Garnett was there. So Robert Parrish had some comments, said he's the greatest offensive Celtic ever.
Hmm.
Is that a little too much? Too much shine for the truth?
That's the chief. He chiefs a lot.
Yeah, I guess so. So you're saying it is? It is a little over the top.
Look, Paul Pierce was an incredible offensive player. I got a chance to play with Paul Pierce in the Olympic Festival in 1995. I was a freshman at Boston University. I just won Freshman of the Year, and Paul Pierce was an incoming freshman to Kansas. And his offensive skill set at that time was ridiculous. once he got to Boston, and I mean, it was his mid-post footwork. Like, he is one of the best offensive players ever. But, you know, you had a guy named Larry Bird. You know, and to Debo's point, he had another guy named Kevin McHale, who are like, Kevin McHale is big men still go to Kevin McHale to learn that footwork and stuff like that. And Larry is the legend.
Yeah.
So that's a mouthful, but he is one of the top three, no question.
All right. Speaking of Isaiah Thomas, he made his debut on Saturday for the Lakers. He had 22 points coming off the bench. He played 31 minutes, 7 to 12, you know, from the field. Give us an overreaction of Isaiah.
I think he gave you one, didn't he?
Let's hear it.
Yeah, I just wanted to come in with energy. I just wanted to bring something to the table. Felt like I got my powers back playing on this team now. So I just wanted to bring that energy, bring that intensity, and make plays. And then the ball happened to go in.
So obviously Isaiah Thomas is feeling pretty good about himself, saying he got his powers back. I go back to the first game he had on the Cavs. He was great coming off the bench. He put in a solid performance. You need to do it over a longer, extended period of time if you're IT to show me more that you're back, that you're healthier, that you are the caliber player that you were with Boston, and do it in a new system with a new group of guys in a locker room.
I got a couple of thoughts. I agree with you 100%. First of all, I'll say good for him because, you know, I don't dislike Isaiah Thomas. He's a good player. Like, I hope he can regain form and seek some of the – like, regain some of that money that was lost with that Cleveland situation. But first of all, your team lost. So your powers here. Here's my question with Isaiah. This is my question. I know he wants to win.
Yeah.
Like, I know he wants to win, but put in a situation and having to choose between a performance like that, where you have 22 and a loss, or a performance where you might have an efficient 11 and your team wins, which would you prefer? And that's the question I have about Isaiah. I'm just being honest. That's the question that I have. If he is a winning player, and winning doesn't mean like winning when you are the guy scoring all the points. Everyone takes that.
Yeah.
Everyone wants to win when you're the guy who gets to score 25. But when you're put to the test of will you do what it takes to win, if Danny eats before you offensively, Debo eats before you offensively, and Hannah eats before you offensively, is that cool with you? And I don't believe the answer to be yes.
I think you can find out a lot about players just by watching them after games, win or lose.
Because for sure.
If there's a guy after a win and he's kind of sulking a little bit because he didn't get his points, that really bothers me. And if there's a guy after a loss who's not bothered by it because he got his 20 and whatever his numbers that he wanted to get, that drives me nuts. And that's a selfish player. And you have to have a player who buys into the team philosophy that kind of wants to, and like you said, wants to win above all else. And I think that's a really hard thing to find, and more so in today's player. I think more so than ever you're seeing self, because there's so much money at stake, and a lot of the contracts are driven by statistics and what numbers you put up.
They are. I feel like when I played, they rewarded point scoring more than they do now. Mm-hmm. Like, there wasn't a 3-and-D category when I played.
Right.
Like, you couldn't just make threes and defend the heck out of somebody. They weren't paying you for that. They were paying guys to put it in the bucket. And so, culturally, we always, I mean, on any team I've been on, there were three guys for the most part. Immediately after a game, I see that score. Like, and they weren't looking at the stat sheet to see, like, what we shot as a team from the field. How many turnovers we had. They just wanted to know what their line looked like.
Yeah.
You know, and they were out there for buckets. And it was just... The culture made you have to be point hungry to get paid. And so I feel like now, if I'm being honest, more guys are getting paid for being good role players, like, and probably maybe too much, but guys are getting paid for that now when they didn't as much back then. And I see guys not hunting as much. There's still those guys out there. Like, Isaiah's a hunter in the truest form. He's hunting buckets all the time. But anyway, that's just the way I felt about it. I felt like back in the day, they just made you hunt for buckets.
I'm with you. All right, D. Wade returned to the Heat. It was a welcome. I mean, it was all over the local news. We're here in South Florida. It was a great story. He had 22 minutes coming off the bench, only 3 points, 1 for 6 from the field. He had 4 turnovers. Had a big block in the game, right, towards the end of the game.
Yeah.
But there was a lot of energy infused in that one. Is there an overreaction to that one?
No.
Hannah's like, no, welcome home.
Let me just say real quick, that Friday night, that game, I was at a rehearsal dinner, and I was definitely that, you know, that girl on her phone watching it at the rehearsal dinner, because I was so pumped just to see the crowd's reaction, just to see Gabrielle in the crowd. I loved all of it.
I mean, I think I think you hit the nail on the head.
It's the equivalent if Peyton Manning got to go back to the Colts after he was in Denver, if Brett Favre would have gone back to Green Bay. Like, all great players, you'd love to see them. And who knows where he finished his career, but to see him back in the uniform.
Oh, he's finishing in Miami.
I agree.
Right?
Right. He should finish.
How much
he
longer
should,
does he really have?
One more year.
That's
this,
it.
Finish out this year and then
and
one
more year.
Yeah, yeah. I think so, too.
So he's got two. Oh, so one and a half.
Yes.
All right, so hopefully he does. But you never know what they need to
figure out for him, because they're still in the East conversation, right? They're still in the East. They need to figure out a clear role for D-Wade, something that makes him feel comfortable, because they don't have a lot of guys who can finish.
Right.
They don't have finishers. And although, like, you know, 1 for 6, 3 points, he's not that bad at this point in his career. But he's not a 24 a night guy either. So you have to figure out a role that can get him on the floor in closing minutes, where he can close, kind of a la like Joe Johnson has done for teams in the past, for Utah and places like that, where you don't necessarily run him into the ground the whole game, but you make sure he's on the floor in closing minutes, because he's the one guy on your team that's got the moxie and the cachet to be able to make big shots. He's got the stones.
So there's no doubt that D-Wade's happier being in South Florida. He's got, you know, he's obviously got some roots here. I think that does matter with players too, where they're playing, the system they're in, and like a player's happiness level. Are you talking about having fun? Like, you notice the Cavs having fun when they're out there. I think one thing that's underrated oftentimes is how much a player likes the city he plays in, likes the atmosphere that he's around. Like, if you had – and if I think it's – I think it's something that the media and analysts don't take in consideration enough. And that was one thing that surprised me when Russ stayed in Oklahoma City, because I thought he'd bounce, because I thought he was a bad fit. Like, he's into fashion. I thought he wanted to go to, like, a major market. Like, seriously.
Right. Yeah.
Like, there would be bigger things that were in play. If you were ranking – when you're a free agent, say you're a big-time free agent, you're coming up. If you were ranking priorities, what would you rank? Like, as far as winning, coaching, quality of life, like where weather. Like, I think those are real factors that you should have to – like, if you're smart, you're making that decision, you should put it in there. Like, you should rank them in pros and cons.
The problem is, like, my problem was I played on a bunch of minimum deals. Mm-hmm. So I didn't have the luxury of like wanting to live in LA or New York. My number one factor was money.
Yeah.
Like I want to get paid. This was my living. Now, given the opportunity to get paid, like when I left Utah, I had played for minimum in Philly for 2 years or a year and a half. I had played a minimum in Dallas, and I had to spend like a month before that in Spain, and had to come back and play for the minimum unguaranteed in Dallas. So then I got 2 years in Utah for like 1.1 and 1.2. So basically a little more than minimum, but it wasn't. So coming out of there, my agent and I sat down, and I had had a pretty good 2 seasons, and we felt like, you know, we could potentially have something going on. And so I did. Everything came into lined up for me. The stars aligned, because I wanted to play for Phoenix. I knew Steve. I had talked to Steve a lot. I played with him in Dallas. They looked like they were having a great time. They had just, I think they beat Memphis, was it? Or, they were trending. And so they were the number one team on my list. And they happened to come to me with a really good deal. And in fairness, because I'm going to contradict myself, my agent said, hey, look, we could hold out maybe, because I think Minnesota and Kevin McHale were coming to Miami tomorrow, and New Jersey was coming to town tomorrow. He said, like, we might be able to get a couple more, but this is where you wanted to play, and it's for more than you thought you'd ever get. And so I took that, because it was important for me to go somewhere where I thought I would have fun, someone I knew, a style that, like, they were up and down. I didn't know to what degree until I got there how much running we did. But I don't know how many millions I gave up. It wasn't many, though. If he told me he was going to get me 10 more million, I would have said, all right, no more. I was going for money. I'm being honest. I wanted to win if I could.
Absolutely.
But I needed to get paid.
Right. And you didn't have the huge $100 million deal early.
Never. Well,
you wanted to set up your family.
I was a minimum guy.
Security for life. So you had to make that a priority. Let's say you're Paul George, though, and he's going to be up for after the season.
Yeah.
Like, should he be looking at, hey, like, what would his priority be?
So Paul George,
And I think it varies by players. Like, I think some players don't care if they're going to be on a winning team. They just want to get paid and have a nice style of life.
Yeah, so let me not speculate on Paul George. Let me just put myself in the situation.
Yeah.
Had I been paid up front and knew I was a max guy, like, I'm trying to win. Mm-hmm. Like, now, like, where the family's secure, I've made my living, now I want to win, right? And then, like, I guess in the hierarchy of what's important, right, it would be getting paid. then it would be getting my championship, and then it would be getting my quality of life and living in a city that I want to live in if I've gotten a championship.
Right.
That would be the way that I'd break that.
My big thing, and I was like you. I didn't have a choice. I got drafted, so I didn't get, you know, I didn't get to pick where I went.
Right.
After that, there were a couple options, but I kind of – and here's – I wanted to go to Atlanta. Like, when I got cut from the Giants, Dan Reeves was in Atlanta, and I told my agent, I'm like – I knew Dan Reeves liked me, so I was like, I want to go to Atlanta.
Right.
And there were some other teams, and I was like, don't worry about it. Don't even call. I wanted to go to Atlanta because it was a fun town. Like, and they had just come off the Super Bowl, so I thought they were going to be a winner, even though they sucked when I got there. but I do – like, I always looked at it. I was like, I do not want to go to a cold weather place. Like, not because it would have affected my play as much as I was like, I just don't want to live in a crappy city.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the cold weather towns – like, I think one of the worst deals this season, and it might end up being better from a basketball standpoint, it's Blake Griffin. Like, for him to go from L.A. to Detroit,
dude,
I was like, that is painful.
That's
even though he might have been in a better situation being in the Eastern Conference and being on a team that might have a little bit better of a run in the you know, to get to the Eastern Conference Finals, I was like, I would be devastated if I was him.
You know why it might not matter as much in the NBA as it in the NFL?
Well, if you're Blake Griffin, you have a boatload of money, so you can take your private jet anywhere.
Well, yeah, you're on the road. But you're on the road so much. Like, I got traded to Charlotte from Phoenix, and I was like, I didn't know anything about Charlotte. Charlotte wound up being great. People were great.
Yeah.
Same with Utah. People ask me about Utah all the time, and yes, it got twisted towards the end, but I loved Utah. I love Salt Lake. I love the people there. My wife still got really good friends out there. My kids have friends out there. Like,
yeah.
But you travel more.
We love Salt Lake, but yes.
Shout out Ty. Yeah. It's been a while since we mentioned him.
Ty Corbin, what up, dog? Where's Ty right now? Anybody, where is he? We should have
Phoenix,
a Where's Ty segment.
I think he's in Phoenix.
Is he?
I think he's an assistant in Phoenix.
Oh, so he survived the cut when they got rid of Earl?
I think so.
Stand by.
Yeah. Where's Ty segment? But yes, Hannah, you're on the road.
Yeah.
You're on the road so much. So if your home city doesn't have like great restaurants or like cool bars, you can find that because
and
you're
more
on the
so
road.
Than the NFL, and you tell me if I'm wrong
way
on
more,
this,
yeah.
They don't care as much about you staying there in the offseason and training there.
Oh no, I was
because in the NFL it's a big deal. They don't like, especially if you're a quarterback, they want you there training in January, February, kind of making it, hey, this is my home, I'm gonna live here. The NBA, they could care less, right?
I shut down my house the day after we
right,
lost.
Right.
It was shut
no
down.
Way.
And I was back like 2 days before training camp.
Oh yep. My goodness.
Don't worry about it.
All right, let's get back to some stuff we might have missed over the weekend. And here's what's happening with Hannah.
All right, guys, no Russ, no Melo, no problem for OKC in their 110-92 victory over Memphis. Sunday night, Russell Westbrook and Carmelo Anthony both missed their second straight games, each with sprained ankles. Now, Paul George led the Thunder with 33 points and 8 assists against the Grizz. An exciting matchup with the Cavs coming Tuesday with two star statuses uncertain.
Oh, they're going to need them boys against the Cavs. You want Paul George, from their perspective, like you want Paul George to have nights like this. The ball's in his hands. He feels ownership of the team. It only helps with the opportunity to re-sign him in the offseason. So I think it's great, but they're gonna need a healthy Russ specifically to compete against the Cavs.
In college hoops, the Bearcats continue to ball. Cincinnati wins their 16th in a row, cruising past SMU 76-51 on Sunday. Cincy now 23-2 on the season and could creep up from their number 6 ranking. Two matchups with a ranked Wichita State squad looming.
Oh, I'm going to have to check. I'm going to tune in to Cincy. I had no idea.
No,
it's about that time. I got to start checking out all these teams so I can fill out my brackets.
There you go.
It's about that time. Also coming soon, pitchers and catchers. So Jake Arrieta has been replaced in the Cubs rotation by Yu Darvish, but apparently Chicago made a similar offer to Arrieta before inking the right-handed Darvish to a 6-year, $126 million contract on Saturday. The Cubs just behind Darvish's former team, the Dodgers, as favorites to win the National League.
It's really hard to picture a guy turning down $126 million, but if you look at the market for pitchers, I don't think he's that crazy to do it. There's several that are making $200+. I think he's somewhere in the 175 to 180 range, so I don't have a problem with him turning it down. Get what you can while you can, man.
Oh, I got no beef with it.
but it's insane.
That's insanity.
Your reaction.
I didn't know that there were $200 million pitchers out there.
Oh, yeah. There's several of them.
Well, my bad.
Oh, man. All right, and last but not least, Frank Reich's tenure has already lasted longer than Josh McDaniels in Indy. The Colts officially have their next head coach this time. Reich, formerly the offensive coordinator for the Super Bowl champion Eagles, signs a 5-year deal while inheriting Andrew Luck and a relieved Jim Irsay.
All right, here are a couple of things I hate about this. And I like the hire, but it's an old boys network, and it's kind of so lazy that you see this happen. Because teams fall into this rut of saying, all right, we need a head coach. what team was good? Let's go hire one of their coaches. And that happens all the time. It's why Josh McDaniels and Matt Patricia were getting talked about for every job, because the Patriots are always good. So they're like, hey, they have to be a good coach. Frank Reich, I like him. I think maybe he will be a good coach. But it's such, to me, it's so predictable that they're going to go hire a coach from the Eagles staff because they just won the Super Bowl. First of all, he did not call all the plays.
Yeah, that was Doug Peterson. Right?
Yes, he was. And that, by the way, their quarterback coach also got hired away to be an offensive coordinator at
the Vikings.
So like, it seems so lazy to me. Like, come on, be more innovative. Go find some young guy on a squad who maybe is bad, but he's a good coach.
I just like his name, Frank. Sounds like Frank White, King of New York. Like, I like it, Frank Wright.
But I think one of the reasons they brought him in too was to work with Andrew Luck. They wanted a quarterback, offensive-minded guy. It's why they like Josh McDaniels from the Patriots. Frank Reich played the position, had one of the greatest comebacks of all time when he was filling in for Jim Kelly on the Bills, and they beat the Oilers. So I think he will be a good fit there, but it's just all of it. And I like the hire. It's not like I'm crushing the hire.
You're just saying it's lazy. Process. You said the practice of just –
exactly.
Yes,
I hate the process. And who knows if they even did the Rooney Rule. Like, did that even get discussed? Did they bring in the hire? Like, yeah, exactly. So who knows what's going on there? The other thing I think that's interesting too, and this is why it's so hard to repeat as champs, is now the Eagles, because this happens. They start picking off your players, and they also start picking off your coaches. And I think this will be an adjustment for the Eagles, and how do they move forward with an entirely new staff?
Not only the change in your culture, but now you're taking the culture and the things that you do that are like your own proprietary blend, if you will, mm-hmm. and people know that other places. Like that might have been something that was contained in your building. Now you got guys on three different staffs around the league knowing exactly what you preach, what you talk about, what your mentality is, and that has an effect.
And also, I think within position rooms, like, so that's how they divide things. In the NFL locker room, everybody go, like, you have team meetings that last 5 minutes, and then you spend your next probably half hour, 45 minutes with just the offense. And then you break off and you spend even more time, an hour, with just the quarterbacks.
Right.
So when you lose John Tifilippo, who's your quarterback coach, you lose him. You're having a new coach just for the quarterbacks that's going to spend a lot of time with them. There's chemistry issues there, coaching styles, communication, all those. So I think once you see those start being chipped away, you have to build those back up again. And I think it just makes it more challenging. I think that's why the Eagles are not the clear favorite to go back-to-back. It's just really hard to overcome that. All right, let's welcome to the show Pete Blackburn. He's a CBS Sports writer. You can follow him at Twitter. I've never talked to him, never met him, but he's fantastic on Twitter, at Pete Blackburn. He's a great follow. He co-hosts his own podcast called Brunch. It's a pop culture pod. A lot of fun to listen to that, too. And he's based out of Boston, so I feel like we shred Boston a lot of times. Hannah hates New England, like hates Tom Brady, so I feel like Boston gets lumped into that.
I love Boston, Pete.
All right, that's right.
Except he doesn't like Gronk.
That's right. So, Pete, welcome to the show, man.
Thank you very much. I will say it's a pretty tough couple of weeks to be a media member from Boston.
Yes.
I don't feel bad.
We're going to get to that. There was some controversy in the Boston sports media market. But so you're doing a lot with the Olympics, right? So you're doing some stuff with them. How has that been so far for you, the storylines coming out of Pyeongchang?
It's been pretty good. I think I was a little disappointed yesterday because of the weather kind of messed up snowboarding a little bit. I was looking forward to that. And the slope style yesterday kind of messed up all the women. Obviously, Jamie Anderson came away with the second straight gold in slope style, but they were pissed yesterday that they didn't push back the competition. And you could tell that they were kind of pissed. You could tell that the weather and the wind was affecting them, and it was probably it was definitely worse than the one 4 years ago. So it had a huge effect.
What's been the biggest story to come out of them? Is it Red Gerard, the kid, the 17-year-old who won gold for the U.S.? Is it Johnny and Tara doing the commentating for figure skating? Like, what's been the biggest story to you to come out so far?
It's definitely not Johnny and Tara, because everybody knew about Johnny and Tara heading into this Olympics. That's nothing new. Right now, it's got to be Red. I honestly had no idea who this kid was heading into this weekend, and now he's basically a goddamn superstar. And he's 17 years old, doesn't look a day over 12. So not a person that you would expect to be an Olympic athlete if you pass him on the street.
So let me ask a question about this NHL not sending their players to the Olympics this year. What's the deal with that? Because the NBA goes back and forth. They send them to the Olympics, but they don't send them to World Games and stuff like that. Is that hurtful for the sport? What's your take on that?
I mean, I think it's hurtful for the sport. I mean, anytime the NHL has put a huge onus on trying to market the game globally, especially over the past couple of years, like they've gone to China, they're going to a few other countries in the upcoming years. They want to grow the game globally. And, you know, what better way to do that than to send the best product and the best players that you can to the Olympics on the world stage? And they're not doing that this year. And I think it's a mistake. And, you know, I as a hockey fan, I'm still looking forward to the Olympics this year. I think it's going to be interesting to see kind of the ragtag groups that they sent over. But yeah, I do think it's hurtful. I mean, especially for in America, it's probably the fourth most popular sport. There's a lack of, you know, international stars that are recognizable outside of the ice. So I think that when you have this many eyes on the games and you have the opportunity to put these stars out there and to get them recognition and to get them, you know, attention on the NHL game, they're missing out.
So in the absence of the NHL stars, like, who's the favorite? Are we talking juniors from all these countries? Are we talking like minor league hockey players? Like, what pool of talent are these guys tapping into, and who's got the best of the rest?
I think one group to look for that could sneak up on some people are the Olympic athletes from Russia. I mean, it's obviously Russia. You can't call them Russia. It's Olympic athletes from Russia. But that's a group that could benefit from the NHL not sending, because the KHL in Russia is probably the second biggest hockey league in the world for pros. My alarm keeps going off. It's early.
but, all good.
So the KHL is the second biggest league in the world. And a lot of NHL guys, you know, if they don't make it in the NHL, or, you know, in some cases there have been guys who leave the NHL early to go back to KHL. There's Ilya Kovalchuk. There's Pavel Datsyuk. Slavon Voinov, those guys, they leave, they go back to the KHL. So I think that's an interesting group to look at. They could do some damage.
Pete, you mentioned being like a big hockey fan, and I have to admit, on the podcast, we don't really talk.
Oh, you
a
can't
lot
tell. He can't time. Tell how good we are on it.
So what is it that we're really missing in? Like in the NHL world right now, like, what should we be latching onto team-wise especially? I used to follow the Panthers all the time. This season, not at all, I have to admit.
For the Panthers, you're not missing too much, to be honest with you. This year, I think, has been a really, really interesting year, because there's the Golden Knights in Vegas. Brand new team, first year in the league. They're in first place in the Western Conference, which is absolutely insane. Nobody even predicted them to make the playoffs. Nobody thought that they'd be great. You know, you look at their roster, it's not really, you know, it doesn't jump off the page at you. They've been unbelievable this year, and there's been a lot of talk of the quote-unquote Vegas flu, teams going into Vegas and, you know, not playing their best in that building for whatever reason. You may want to connect the dots. There's been a lot of talk about that. But, you know, a team that, you know, near and dear to my heart, the Boston Bruins, they've been unbelievable as well. A lot of young guys on that team have come up big, and they put it together this year. And, you know, they were kind of on a rebuilding schedule. They're a few years ahead at this point, it looks like. The Tampa Bay Lightning are a team that kind of they've had a lot of talent over the past, you know, handful of years. They suffered a ton of injuries last year. It seemed like that was going to be their year. You know, that was kind of a devastating year. But they brought their guys back. they're really putting it together this year. I think that that is a team that could come out of the East and do a lot of damage in the playoffs.
I think one great thing that the NHL can do is get more emergency backup goalies involved, like the Rangers did when they had the guy come in with number 69 and he had McBackup on his
jersey.
Like, that should be a thing on every team, or maybe it is.
They do have emergency backups, and you see that come up like a handful of times every year. And the stories that come out of that are kind of hilarious, because sometimes it's like the team trainer, and it's like a 65-year-old guy sitting in full uniform on the bench. It's hilarious. And sometimes they call guys from local colleges, and they look so out of place. It's one of the coolest things every single year.
So one of the things with the Olympics that I think is a problem, and I think that NBC, I think, is trying to figure it out, and it's basically the ratings are playing out too, is that the ratings are down. I think, and we talked about this on our podcast last week, the impact of social media. Like, it's impossible to not know the outcomes of the events now, and because they can't do a lot live because of the time difference, I think it really hurts it. Like, is there a solution to this other than, hey, don't be so snobby if you're Americans? Just kind of, you know, like, is there a solution to this problem, or is it just always going to be that way?
Yeah, I don't know. It's tough because, I mean, you're trying to appeal and you're trying to, you know, market to every country, and it's tough to be like, well, we're only going to put it on time zones where Americans can watch it in prime time. So, you know, that's kind of a difficult thing to go around, you know, especially where, you know, if you don't air it live, there's a good chance that you're gonna get spoilers and things like that. You know, that's something that's interesting, and I also think that a thing that hurts the Olympics is that they're so strict with like their social media guidelines. Like, you can't share. They're very strict about people not being able to share video and GIFs and stuff on Twitter. And I think that kind of hurts them as well in terms of marketing to younger people and to getting people to watch. I think that, you know, as sports fans here, we've seen it, you know, like NBA highlights that pop up on Twitter, you know, any sports highlights that pop up on Twitter, you know, that kind of, it's just like free marketing for the game. And if you see stuff happening, you're more likely to tune in. So, you know, I think that's part of the reason that they're kind of hurting.
Pete, I'm going to cut to the chase. We got our required, like, hockey and winter sports out of the way. I want to know from a Boston guy, like, how blasphemous was it that Robert Parrish got up there and said that Paul Pierce was the greatest offensive Celtic of all time? Like, does Boston take offense to that? Clearly, he's a great Celtic, but there have been some...
You're going after Bird
and
Boston.
Yeah, you're going after Bird and McHale. Like, how does Boston feel about that?
Yeah, I when I heard that, I'm on the younger side, so I'm like early 20s ish.
Right.
I'll give myself that. when I heard that, I was like, I don't know about that. I haven't watched these other guys, but I've heard some pretty good things.
Right.
And that Larry Bird guy gets some pretty high praise.
Right.
So yeah, that was something that I think some people like kind of raised their eyebrows at.
So one of the things with the Olympics was the loser was Chris Masder. He was the big story. He was from the U.S. He had the silver medal. Great dude, like positive vibes, like one of those positive dudes you ever heard out there. But I was very seriously wondering this: how many dudes do you think you have to beat out to become an American loser? Like, seriously, how many guys do you think you have? Like, what's the competition level
like? The talent
like
pool.
The talent pool for losing in the U.S.
I think it's bigger than you expect, honestly. I really do. I think there's actually a kid that I went to college with after we graduated. He went out for skeleton, which is basically like the same thing as luge. You just face forward, which, you know, I don't really get. But he went out. He tried to be a skeleton racer, and he didn't make it. So I think that skeleton is even less popular than luge, and there are enough people where people don't make it. So that's more than I would expect, to be honest with you.
That's funny.
All right, so anybody who just tries that sport just automatically makes it to the Olympics.
All right, so luge, skeleton. All right, what about curling? All right, because Danny says that if he trains for how long was it?
I think 2 years.
2 years, he could be an Olympic curler. All right, what is? Have you been to a curling event? Have you seen it live?
I have not, but I will say it grows on you. I watched it on TV, and like the first 10 minutes, I was like, I don't know if this is for me. 30 minutes, 35 minutes later, I was I was a diehard curling fan.
Like what? What part of it? Like what's? Here's my question. Like in all seriousness, what's the talent? Is it the pitcher? Is it the scrubber? Like what? What's the talent in the pair?
If you're having me break down we're gonna have some issues.
I think it's the only. I think it's the only sport where to train for it, I would actually put on weight because it's like a big. They do it at like beer halls in Minnesota. So yeah. Like you go and you get hammered while you're curling. Like that's I think fantastic. Maybe I should give it a shot. All right, let's do some superlatives. That's what we do on our pod every time. We have some fun towards the end of the interview. All right, so you're from Boston. Who would you trust more? Nick from Boston or Lene Kakua?
Lene Kakua.
All right. Because our man Nick from Boston was one of the greatest troll jobs ever when he basically fooled Pete Borges into thinking he was Ron Borges into thinking that he was Don Yee, who's Tom Brady's agent, and Borges ran a whole column on it. He ends up getting suspended because he ran with it. What has been the reaction in Boston to this huge story?
Honestly, this past few weeks has been just like an insane hit after hit to the media in Boston. Like the kid calling Tom Brady's 4-year-old daughter an annoying little piss ant. It was like the 7th worst thing now that's happened in the past 2 weeks in Boston sports media, which is insane. But the Borges thing, that I feel like everybody just kind of it was more like just laughing him out of the city for the past like few days or so. It's a bad look on Borges. It's a bad look on the Herald. It's a bad look on the editors there. Like, it's crazy that that story even ran on the website. Never mind, went to print and was on the back page of the paper.
All right. So what do you think took longer to get over? The Patriots Super Bowl loss or that viral video of Tom Brady kissing his son?
I will say I'm going to say the Super Bowl loss because I really don't think that there's like getting over the photo of him kissing the son.
Oh, you're not
like,
over
that's
it.
Gonna come up, that's going to come up against Tom Brady for the rest of time.
Yeah,
like anytime an opposing fan base wants to troll Tom Brady, like I saw the sign was at the Super Bowl at the Super Bowl parade for the Eagles. Somebody blew up the photo and was holding it on a stick at the parade. Like that is going to come up against the Patriots at every possible point moving forward. And this, I will say, this Super Bowl loss for me as a Patriots fan hurt a little less than any of the other ones because we did not deserve to win this game. Like there was no fluky plays that went against them. They were outcoached and the Patriots shot themselves in the foot. So this one, I had an easier time getting over. So I will say the Brady kissing photo.
Well played. Huge ECHL fight over the weekend. So the question is, what's better than two goalies fighting on the ice?
That is a good question. I would say two goalies fighting on the ice surrounded by everybody else fighting on the ice. You have an entire line brawl. Around the goalies, then that's what's better.
When do we see Tom versus Time finalized? Like, when's the last episode going to occur of Tom versus Time? Because it's been put on pause after the Super Bowl loss.
Yeah, are you like an avid watcher of this?
I haven't seen a single episode.
Really?
You.
Yes.
I recommend it. I think it's good.
No way.
I never really liked the idea of it. The whole, when I saw the trailers and stuff, I was like, at some point, this guy's really poking the bear. I kind of wanted to keep my distance from it. I think that anytime you get overconfident and you kind of just start flaunting how great you are at staying on top of your game for as long as you can, I think at some point, the guy upstairs is going to be like, you know what, enough of this, you're done. So I'm not trying to actively promote Tom versus Time.
I have one random question. I was looking at your Twitter for brunch, listen to brunch, and I noticed that you guys were talking about the Snapchat update.
Yes.
How do you feel about that update? Because I am angry.
Yeah, I'm more confused than angry, but one thing that I hate about it is that it's kind of like convinced me to watch people's stories more so than the last.
Oh, like people
Snapchat
you don't
version.
Care about.
I do not care about anybody's stories. And for some reason, this new update is like, hey, you should watch this. And I'm like, you know what? Fine. And I have not enjoyed a single second of it. So congrats to them for making me, for forcing me to use their product, but not a fan.
What's great is, do you see the user that DM'd or sent a message to Snapchat and said, this is awful, mm-hmm. and then like pleaded, said, hey, if we get a certain amount of retweets, that you'll change it back to the old system?
Yeah.
And Snapchat said, sure, if you get 50,000 retweets, we'll change it back. And it got like 400,000 retweets. So obviously a lot of people feel the same way.
A lot of people feel the same way. Change it back. Change
yes,
it back.
Absolutely. All right, Pete, thanks for joining us, man. We appreciate your time. Make sure you can check us, check him out at Pete Blackburn on Twitter. He's a really fantastic follow. And he's got his own podcast, Hannah just mentioned, called Brunch. Check it out. Really good dude. Thanks for joining us, man.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right, let's do some topics, Debo. What do you got for us?
All right, we just talked about it with Pete, but a little bit more here. People that were counting on the Pats to win Super Bowl 52, we had odds makers, we had Raja, and we had the director of Tom vs. Time, the Facebook-based Tom Brady hype train documentary series was consistently released until Brady lost last week. Gotham Chopra says Chapter 6 was going to be all about a sixth ring, but now the episode is delayed. Danny, Hannah, levels of devastation?
I'm so angry at that. Like, what little... It makes me so mad because... I'm sorry. I just think it's a stupid move to do that. Like, if you're going to release something and you're going to hype it up and you're going to talk about it, at least continue the cockiness enough to, like follow through with your level of cockiness.
And it's reality. Like, people want the insight into what that looks like when he doesn't win. Like, is his whole life winning? Like, is that all the guy ever does? I mean, that's...
Be a human?
I would be more interested in seeing what that looks like. Like, if there's a level of depression, or if he's right back in the gym the next day on his grind to get that number six, or if he's contemplating retirement. Like, I just think that's cheesy. I think it's cheesy. It's a cop-out, and I think it's pretty lame that you don't show him after you lose. And I don't know that that's on Tom. I'm just saying, as a fan, and I don't even love him, if I were ever going to watch, I would want to see that. I want to see what happens after the loss.
As the only expert in here who's actually watched the Tom versus Time, every single one of them, a couple things. One of the things that bothered me about the whole series is that I thought it was way too scripted, and I think it is on Tom. I think it is his decision to pause it, because I don't think he wants to put this out there. I thought it was
cheesy.
It's so scripted, where he wants everything to appear perfect, and every answer is like thought out, and there's no, just let me see what you are
no
as a dude. Like, yeah,
no,
exactly.
No reality.
Let me see who you are. And what's crazy is my wife, and I'm a huge Brady fan. Like, I've always been a huge fan of his. My wife, huge Brady fan, and I actually watched a couple episodes with her, and she was like, you know what? And she's always, like, if there was a top five list of the you know, if you do those top five lists of who you could go ahead and have your hall pass with, she would have put him on there, right? But she came out there and she said, you know what? I like him a little bit less because of that. And if you wanted to be real.
Because of the break?
And what's that?
Because of the pause right now, or because of how scripted it is?
She doesn't even know about that yet. Like, okay. She's not even paying attention because of how scripted it was.
Got it.
And if you want people to really get a glimpse of what you're like, show them how you deal with adversity.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see what, like, because I guarantee you, Giselle, who very much, you can totally tell she doesn't want to play anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, it is so obvious. She's real. She's like, I don't want to play.
Right.
She's
I want to see the conversation they have about his career.
You don't think we eventually see that? I feel like we might, just not right now. That footage.
I hope so. I hope we do. I hope we do. Like, that's a good point, Debo, because maybe it's just taking longer. Maybe they want to do some more follow-up. But I have a feeling you're not going to see another episode until he wins another Super Bowl.
Yeah, I think it's going to be like off-season production now. I think,
and if he never wins another Super Bowl, it may just be uncut footage that you don't hear for 50 years.
I wonder
years.
If they show footage of him in Costa Rica right now with Giselle. Posted a nice Instagram yesterday holding Giselle.
I'm sure they will, because they were in Costa Rica.
I would
in
literally
four.
Rather see that than like anything.
You need to
I'd
watch
rather
it.
Just
they
see
were
them
in
on
Costa
vacation.
Rica. You need to watch.
I just want
to.
Can I just get like a live video of Giselle's workouts? That's all I want.
Yeah.
Brady may be coming from a fear-based organization. We're gonna have to credit another podcast right now. One that is Danny has appeared on last week on Pardon My Take. Eagles tackle Lane Johnson exclaimed, I just think that the Patriot Way is a fear-based organization. Does he have a point? And do results prove that's okay to be fear-based?
All right, he's getting this from a teammate, because Chris Long was on the Patriots, won a Super Bowl. Now Chris Long has won a Super Bowl with the Philadelphia Eagles. Guarantee you he's learning some of this info. You can also tell from the outside. But Chris Long did not have as much fun winning a Super Bowl with the Patriots as
he said
did.
That on the same podcast.
Right.
He said he had much more fun
absolutely.
With this team.
Absolutely. It's more enjoyable. It's a more enjoyable atmosphere. There are some coaches, Jimmy Johnson was well known to do it, where every day you felt like, and it didn't matter who you were, you felt like you could get cut. And that was their motivational tactic. Some guys are able to respond to it. Other guys hate it. I would have hated it. I think it is. I would. A lot of guys get burned out from the Patriots.
There's more than one way to skin a cat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are different personality types in terms of coaches, organizations. Like, for instance, I have two coaches that are just complete opposites of each other. Like Jerry Sloan. Jerry Sloan was tough, hard-nosed, in-your-face. Practices were grueling, almost to the point of fights. And I loved him. I loved working for him. I loved playing for him. And then I had Mike D'Antoni, who was just the opposite. Laid back, you know, chill, super happy, everybody having a good time. I'd be running around screaming in practices, laughing and joking, and we came out and we rolled people. And I loved Mike. Like, I worked in both of those systems. They were completely, you know, different from each other, but they both experienced high, high, high levels of success. So, like, look, it's not every situation's for everybody, right? Like, and that's just the way it goes. But you can't argue with the success in New England. Like,
yeah.
I don't, like, you can call it what you want. You call it five Super Bowls over the last how many years?
18. So this fan had some fear in him after the trade deadline last week. Anesthesia, reaction vids, all the rage right now. So imagine waking up and hearing your team trade it for Derrick Rose. That's what happened to this medicine-riddled Jazz fan last week.
We're waving Derrick Rose. He's not going to play on the Jazz.
Good. This is no good. If it was like 2012, I'd be happy. But he sucks.
Jay Crowder's good.
I know, but I mean, he was good in Boston. He sucked in Cleveland.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So he said he wished he had 2012 D-Rose. That's probably still a bit late, but imagine telling a 2011 D-Rose that someone would react this way in 2018.
Oh, man. I mean, this dude was one of the most dynamic, electric players in the entire NBA. And it's completely fallen off the map.
Injuries.
Do you think it's injuries?
Yeah.
It's all the injuries.
I think injuries played a huge part. And I think mentally, I don't know D-Rose like that. But if everything was cool and he was never hurt, I think mentally he would have been fine. But the injuries, I think, not only took a toll on his physical, but it took a toll on his mental and his spiritual in terms of playing the game.
Yeah.
And all of that is just too big of a hurdle to overcome. And he never really got a chance to ever expand his game. He was always just fast twitch. He was a young player, so he was always faster, stronger, you know, quicker, more explosive, and he never got to develop anything else. He was injured for years and years after that, and so, you know, it's a shame, man, because
it is a shame. He was incredible.
He was electrifying for a while.
Derrick Rose, a guy that's lost his ups and verticality a little bit. Dirk Nowitzki, he's one of the most accomplished players in NBA history. Crazy stats, but on Saturday, for the first time this season, he rose up. A relative term, and dunked a basketball. He's 7 feet, but he's also 39 years old. And
30.
Then he had to miss last night due to ankle effusion. I don't know what that term means. I don't know if the dunk caused it. Coincidence? I don't know. Raja, how long are you going to be able to dunk a basketball?
Yeah, not much longer, bro. I can barely dunk one now.
Really?
I mean, I could dunk it once if I got warmed up.
Yeah.
And like, but I can't do any kind of like windmills or 360s. Like, this is basic cable. Go up.
But like, if your boys are playing with your kids,
yeah.
Your sons are playing with you, and they say, "Dad, dunk," you can dunk.
I can dunk, yeah. But again,
do you think you'll be able to do it?
It's
to your
basic
50?
Cable, nah. Because I don't play. Like, I don't play. And if I'm training until I'm 50, like, you know, my Orange Theory and staying in great shape, probably. But I wouldn't imagine that. Dirk just
Orange
looks
theory.
Like if you put pain in the dictionary and had like a video of what pain looked like, Dirk running up and down the court would be like.
But hasn't
the definition
he always like
pain.
Walked like that?
He always has been funky, but Jesus, it just looks like it hurts right now.
So my daughters, we play at the courts by my house, and they have every height. They have 10 foot and 9 foot,
yep.
And they have the 9 foot are off to the side. And I don't know if my girls technically are really like that dialed in to which one is that much lower, and so they think I can dunk. And so I let
Stop.
It perpetuate. So I'm like, yeah, Daddy can do this. Isn't this awesome? I'm like throwing down these rim shakers. Yeah, doing the power dunks. So one of these days they might figure it out. But I'm gonna keep
on
doing reverses. Yeah, for sure. All right, we might have to have a dunk contest on a 9 foot rim.
Ooh.
See who wins. Debo, could you dunk on a 9 foot?
I am all about that.
I can dunk. I can't do much. That's basic. Cable like Raja said.
On a 9 foot?
Yeah.
All right. Basic cable. I like
Hannah?
It. We'll even get Hannah involved.
I can I can dunk.
We'll just wait for
our
one-on-one.
I might need some alcohol.
Then I can dunk. All right. All right. We're going to have to see that. All right. Thanks for checking us out. Hope you guys have a great Monday and a start to your week.
Sorry. I mean, like, okay, never mind.
Yeah, we'll see. Subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts. Check us out on Google Play, Stitcher, and SoundCloud. And make sure you follow us, as always, at Kanell and Bell on Twitter.